This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Fresh Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Oh, Thank you. Join the War Resisters League on Thursday, June 11th for the David Dillinger Lecture on Nonviolence. The keynote speaker, Nicholas Baker, is the author of Human Smoke, The Beginnings of World War II, The End of Civilization, which New York Times Review called an eloquent and passionate assault on the idea that the deliberate targeting of civilians can ever be justified. WRL's lecture on nonviolence honors the memory of revolutionary pacifist and activist David Dillinger. Also on the program is George Hauser, who refused the draft with Dillinger in 1940. Please come to this free program on Thursday, June 11th, 7 p.m. at Judson Memorial Church, 55 Washington Square, South in Manhattan. For more information, the War Resisters League at 212-228-0450. Again, 212-228-0450. Or see www.warresisters.org.
It's a pretty good bass line there, isn't it? Very catchy bass line. I don't know what the music was, but I like it. So shout out to Kamal Kalfani, who I believe chose it for that card, which was created for the War Resisters League for their upcoming Dave Dillinger lecture on nonviolence. But it's Dave Dillinger was the anti-war leader, as opposed to John Dillinger, who was the bank robber, just to get that confusion out of the way. Okay. So you're going to want to go to that. That's going to be, I'll try to play that card again later, because my friends at the War Resisters League asked me to do so. You might want to check that out. It's going to be June 11th, next Thursday, 7 p.m. at Judson Memorial Church. With, once again, that's going to be Nicholson Baker, author of the recent controversial book, Human Smoke, The Beginnings of World War II, The End of Civilization. He will be the keynote speaker at the War Resisters League Dave Dillinger Lecture on Nonviolence, which honors Dave Dillinger, a World War II resistor, civil rights activist, anti-Vietnam War leader, member of the Chicago Eight, and peace and justice activist until his death at the age of 89. The event, free and open to the public, will be held on Thursday, June 11th, 7 p.m. at Judson Memorial Church in New York City. If you want more information, you can check out the War Resisters League online at warresisters.org. And this is actually extremely apropos to what we're going to be discussing tonight on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. And by the way, this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg, and this is listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI. On the subject of non-commercial listener-supported WBAI, I would just like to give a big hearty hand to everybody who came through for us during the fund drive, which we just successfully concluded, because we actually exceeded our goal of $800,000. We laid it on the line that that we're in deep trouble and that the station's survival is at stake. And you all took it to heart and came through for us. So a big round of applause and a big shout out to all of you who did. Yeah, all right, everybody who pledged, right on. Very good. Thank you for coming through for WBAI. And by the way, pay your pledge, please. Okay, really, really important. Pay your pledge. Let's not rest on our laurels, because all of those pledges don't mean anything until they're paid, right? They mean nothing until they're paid. So please, 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 please pay your pledge. Keep WBAI around to fight another day. So, oh yeah, to identify the music, we opened with two cuts from the second album, which our friend Mitch Ritter sent to us from Israel, purchased on location in Israel from Amal Merkus, the Palestinian vocal master. This album is called Shauk, which my handy glossary of Islamic terms translates as the yearning of the heart to meet the beloved. Certainly a sentiment to which we can all relate, I am sure. And actually, most of the songs on this record are on themes of love and family. Some with a certain degree of political content, but all on that theme. For instance, the two I just played were respectively homages to Amal Mirkus's grandmother and mother. So be very appropriate for Mother's Day, which just passed 3 weeks ago. I'd give a shout out to my mom, except she never stays up this late. So let's see, what else? Okay, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to, theoretically, what we're going to do tonight is, we had a little bit of a discussion last week, sort of a preliminary discussion before we got into the main discussion, which was about the politics of BAI. Before we got into the main discussion, which was about the internal politics which are happening here at the station, we had a little sort of preliminary discussion about the atrocity which we just witnessed and really are continuing to witness in Sri Lanka, and a little analogy to what Israel did in Gaza. Pretty clear-cut analogy. It was very, very clear-cut to me while it was happening. And the difference is, as I said last week, that it would be as if Israel, instead of just, because the campaign, the aerial campaign and military campaign in Gaza and in northern Sri Lanka began almost simultaneously back in December. But the Israelis, under a great deal of global scrutiny and pressure, backed off after 3 weeks, and I believe partially in response to the power transfer in Washington, backed off after 3 weeks, and let Gaza begin to recover with its basic political structures intact after an horrific toll. Whereas in Sri Lanka, without very much global scrutiny or pressure, the military campaign continued until a week ago, a little bit more than a week ago now, about 10 days ago. So it would be as if Israel, instead of backing off after 3 weeks, had continued to pursue the military campaign until finally Hamas was destroyed and they had taken back Gaza and reoccupied it. So can you imagine what the global reaction would be if that had happened? I mean, the facts sort of speak for themselves. The fact that it didn't happen is an indication of the degree of global outrage over what, in fact, Israel did. And yet, Sri Lanka has been able to get away with this. The Sri Lankan state has been able to get away with this. So we're going to be examining the whys and wherefores of this situation. And perhaps we will take listener phone calls on the question. Once again, in about 40 minutes at around 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe we'll take listener phone calls at 212-209-2900. Don't call now. We're going to take phone calls at around 1 o'clock in the morning. If I get through all the ranting I want to get through between now and then, 212-209-2900. But maybe we're going to do the reverse of what we did last week, where last week we had a little preliminary discussion about Sri Lanka and Gaza and then moved into the WBAI discussion. Perhaps this week we'll do the opposite. Perhaps we'll have a little discussion, a little update about what's been happening here at WBAI, and then go into the main discussion about Sri Lanka. So I'll tell you what. Why don't we hear a little bit more from Amal Mirkus, and then we'll have just a little bit to say about WBAI, and then we'll have a bit more to say about Sri Lanka and Gaza. And then, if all goes well, we'll take listener phone calls. So, without any further ado, let's hear a little bit more from Amal Mercus. Now, which CD is it? Is it this one? Yeah, it's this one. 1, 2, 3, 4.
المولود كل لحظة بدهر جمع عطر مشدود، عطر مشدود. جيت عروس حكيت ألف دمع ليلة قدر، ليلة قدر. جينا بتعروس، جينا بتعروس، جينا بتعروس، جينا بتعروس. مبروك.
All right, a little bit more from Amal Mercus and her album, Shauk. Here on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, where it is now mere seconds of 12:30 in the a.m. And, okay, now I promised that we weren't going to do self-referential programming tonight, so I'm going to have very, very little to say about WBAI. But, as long as... there continues to be contention to the changes here, I'm going to at least monitor the situation on the air. So in the interest of full disclosure, a look at the Take Back WBAI website, takebackwbai.org website, reveals that there is going to be a demonstration 2 weeks from tomorrow, Wednesday, June 17th, to Take Back WBAI, Undo the Coup, here at the station at 120 Wall Street. Once again, I object to calling it a coup. You can oppose it. Maybe you've got good reasons to oppose it. But I'm not sure it's a coup. When, after all, the rightly or wrongly, all right, and I'm not going to come down on either side of the rightly or wrongly, okay? Rightly or wrongly, it seems that the local station board, the LSB, did vote for the personnel changes which have occurred. So I'm not entirely sure that we can call it a coup. Nonetheless, they're going to be the Take Back WBAI Coalition is going to be holding a protest here at the station June 17th, 5 p.m. at 120 Wall Street. Now, I will say that, I wish that that the other side, so to speak, the now it seems dominant faction on the board, which voted for the changes, the pro-regime change faction, you might say, well, because they've got the upper hand, they don't... They don't feel the imperative to make their case as aggressively before the public as the folks on the shorter end of the stick do. So there isn't any such website that that I can direct you to give the opposing point of view. But I urge you to try to get both points of view, which is why I've been reading statements from both sides, as it were, over the air. I'll also say that, another reason, perhaps, that, Take Back WBAI has got their own website where they've got, where they make their case in an organized manner is, well, because they're more disciplined. I mean, Justice and Unity sort of, acts like a disciplined cadre organization. Whereas, the opposing faction, there's all of this talk that, they really are a bloc, even though they don't call themselves a bloc. Well, I'm a little bit skeptical about that, actually. They may generally vote as a bloc, but they don't have the same kind of disciplined organization that the Justice and Unity people have. So that may also explain why they don't have their own, website, putting across their POV. Explicitly. And, in the interests of democracy and of making their case, I sort of urge them to do so, because I can the people who are trying to bring back Bernard, I can just tell you to go to takebackwbai.org and you can read for yourself what they've got to say. And the people who support the changes around here, there isn't any that I know of. There isn't any such website that I can point people to. So they might want to consider that. once again, you know, I mean, I've got my criticisms of both sides in this split. I will give credit where credit is due. The Take Back WBAI folks are not calling for a boycott of the station fundraising efforts. In fact, quite to the contrary, they are. Their website said it is urgent that you join the station by June 30th by donating $25 or more or 3 hours of volunteer labor so that you have the right to vote in this summer's board election and for the recall of destructive board members. So, you know, once again, they're encouraging people to become members of the station and to jump into the fray. And I encourage you all to do that as well, regardless of which faction, or even if, you know, those of you who don't support any faction out there, you know, jump into the fray, become a member of the station. You know, it's this situation at BAI has for too long been dominated by the same small handful of personalities, and we need to make the tent much, 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 much bigger. So yes, more people should join WBAI and join the fray. So that's, you know, to be said, that's to the credit of the Take Back WBAI folks. They're not calling for a boycott of the station. They're calling for people to actually become members of the station. So that's good. What's not so good is, you know, once again, if you click on the Join This Coalition link for the endorsers, you know, I must object in the strongest possible terms to their unprincipled alliance with the International Action Center. You all know how I feel about that. Not going to say much more about it. The only other thing which I have to say is that according to, now I confess that I have not done my homework and checked out the reality of the situation independently, corroborated what is in fact being posted to the Indy Media website, which is that both Bernard White and Io Harrington have been banned from the airwaves, banned from the premises and from the airwaves. So I'm not sure I go along with that. I don't think I go along with that. You know, even if you support the changes around here, I don't think it's called for to ban people from the airwaves. And I've yet to see, once again, because the pro-regime change people are not making their cases aggressively, perhaps I've yet to see a forthright explanation as to why, or indeed whether, this is the case. But if it is the case, I call upon those who are responsible for making the decision to make explicitly clear what cause they have to do so. So I don't go along with banning people from the airwaves. Even if you support the regime change program, you don't have to go along with banning people from the airwaves. Similarly, even if you are opposed to the regime change, you don't have to necessarily call it a coup, okay? Just out of respect for the English language, maybe it's a little bit overstated to call it a coup. So, once again, criticisms of both sides, but I call upon all of the listeners to, if you're not already a member, become a member. You can do it anytime online at WBAI.org. Pay your $25, become a member, jump into the fray, find out what's going on at the station, listen to the propaganda from both sides, and make up your own mind independently. Take everything with a grain of salt, and as Bernard himself likes to say, pay close attention. So, there we go. Let's get that out of the way. That's gotten out of the way. Now we'll move on to the all right, the situation with Sri Lanka and Gaza. And the differences in international reaction, all right, this is a little bit of a dangerous discussion, but I've never been one to shy away from danger. If I can get through everything I want to get through in the next 20 minutes, we will take your listener phone calls, preferably on the question of Sri Lanka. as opposed to the question of WBAI, in about 20 minutes at 1 o'clock in the morning. So, here, let me read a couple of news briefs. I'm going to start with two news briefs from which I produced from online sources on my website, World War IV Report. That's www.4report.com, Arabic numeral 4. Here, this one is from about a month and a half ago, April 16th. Israel rejects UN Gaza war crimes investigation. Israel will not comply with a UN Human Rights Council investigation into possible war crimes that were committed during recent fighting in the Gaza Strip, according to an April 15th statement by Israeli government officials. The probe was originally approved by the UN Human Rights Council in January, which recently appointed South African judge Richard Goldstone to head the four-member delegation in its fact-finding mission. An unidentified official said that a letter was sent to Goldstone last week stating that Israel would not comply with the investigation because it doubted the mission's objectivity. Israel also argued that the investigation did not focus enough on Hamas hostilities prior to the Israeli incursion into the Gaza Strip. Hamas has said it will cooperate with the investigation. The investigation drew criticism from the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs earlier this month being 2 months ago, April. The probe was a result of the report authored by the UN Special Rapporteur, Richard Falk, that criticized Israel for failing to take adequate precautions to distinguish between civilians and combatants in their offensive in the region. Both Israel and the U.S. condemned the report as biased. An internal Israeli investigation found last week that war crimes had not been committed. In other words, they exonerated themselves in the offensive, despite individual reports by Israeli soldiers. All right. So that was from April 16th. Now here's a more recent report on Sri Lanka refuses external probes into alleged war crimes. This one dated June 2nd, today, or yesterday, if you're one of these fastidious types who insist that the day begins at midnight. Sri Lankan Foreign Minister Rohitha Bogolagama, forgive me, on May 31st dismissed calls from Amnesty International to publish the official death toll during the final weeks of the armed conflict that ended last month. Bogolagama said that only Sri Lankan courts will be permitted to investigate both alleged human rights violations and the number of civilian deaths that occurred during the final weeks of the conflict. So in other words, they want to do exactly what Israel did and investigate themselves and, gee, what a surprise, probably exonerate themselves. Amnesty International has called for an independent investigation into the matter, while the UN Undersecretary General John Holmes has said that it will be very difficult to accurately assess such a number. Media sources have continued to question the numbers circulated by Sri Lankan authorities and the UN as potentially up to three times below the actual number of deaths. The UN Human Rights Council. Ah, okay. Now, here's the significant difference. Remember that in the last blurb we just read about Israel and Gaza, it was the United Nations Human Rights Council, which was calling for the independent investigation, right? Whereas in the case of Sri Lanka, it has been Amnesty International, which is calling for the independent investigation. And what has been the stance of the UN Human Rights Council? The UN Human Rights Council adopted a resolution last week that welcomed the end of the conflict, but failed to call for an investigation of the war crimes allegedly committed during the conflict. Aid workers and the international community have expressed concern over human rights violations during and after the Sri Lankan conflict. Despite a joint statement issued by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and Sri Lankan President Mahinda Rajapaksa about allowing full humanitarian access to refugee or, quote, welfare, unquote, camps, the Sri Lankan government has continued to restrict access, alleging an ongoing security screening for any remaining rebels. All right. So, all right, this is very interesting. Go back to the last blurb. UN Human Rights Council sells out Sri Lanka's Tamils. A rather biased headline, perhaps, but the text is completely objective. The UN Human Rights Council on May 27th dropped a European Union draft resolution calling for an investigation into possible war crimes during Sri Lanka's recently concluded war on the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, or LTTE, and adopted Sri Lanka's counter-resolution. Of the 47-member council, 29 voted for Sri Lanka's resolution, 12 against, and 6 abstained. UN Human Rights Chief Navi Pillay told the council there is credible evidence both the armed forces and the LTTE, the Tamil Tigers, grossly violated international law. But Sri Lanka, backed by China, India, and Pakistan, managed to push through its own resolution. All right, so this would be as if the Human Rights Council, instead of demanding, interjecting editorially here, the Human Rights Council, instead of demanding an external independent probe into Israeli war crimes in Gaza, had instead approved a resolution which was authored by Israel itself. Okay? let's see. But Sri Lanka, backed by China, India, and Pakistan, managed to push through its own resolution. The text condemns the Tamil Tigers and, quote, welcomes the liberation by the government of Sri Lanka of tens of thousands of its citizens that were kept by the LTT against their will as hostages, end quote. So, all right, let's just continue. I'll stop with the editorial interjections. Let me just keep reading, and then I'll give some analysis. The council called on Sri Lanka to, quote, continue strengthening its activities to ensure there was no discrimination against ethnic minorities in the enjoyment of the full range of human rights, end quote. Now, note, I'll just add this, note the strategic use of the past tense verb was no discrimination against ethnic minorities, as opposed to is. Because the discrimination, as we shall see, is ongoing and perhaps escalating. All right, now, there was an analysis which appeared in the London Times by one Catherine Phillip, one of their Asia analysts, as to a sort of a strategy by Sri Lanka's government to play the regional powers off against each other, which is now characterized by a tilt away from India and the West and towards China and Russia. So she writes, although India went along with the UN Human Rights Council approving the Sri Lankan authored resolution on the Sri Lankan conflict, but this was apparently due to Sri Lanka's skillful manipulation of the rivalry between between China and India, and sort of playing them off against each other. So I quote from the London Times Asia analyst Catherine Phillip, China's role in the Sri Lankan civil war is well known. Its deal to build a major port at Hambantota in southern Sri Lanka is part of a regional strategy to create a, quote, string of pearls of friendly harbors in Pakistan, India, and Burma along key shipping routes through the Indian Ocean. Less well known is India's involvement in this and other deals. It was Delhi, not Beijing, that Sri Lanka first approached over the Hambantota deal, but having no need of a port so close to home, India declined. China's entry into Sri Lanka has put India in an awkward position. Should it refuse any of Sri Lanka's wishes, like weaponry and training, it knows that Beijing will be the next number Colombo calls, Colombo being the capital of Sri Lanka. Any pressure India might try to exert on Sri Lanka is canceled out by Chinese acquiescence, and worse still for India, Pakistan's acquiescence. Pakistan has been selling arms to Sri Lanka with China's encouragement throughout the last stages of the civil war. Hence the bizarre partnership of India, China, and Pakistan on the supporting side of Sri Lanka's self-adulating resolution at the UN Human Rights Council. Next month, for the first time, Sri Lanka will attend the Shanghai Cooperation Council as a dialogue partner, a blessing bestowed by Russia and China in recognition of its importance in the new Indian Ocean Great Game. And I will just interject that the Shanghai Cooperation Council is a regional grouping which is led by Moscow and Beijing, which includes most of the Central Asian states, which are not aligned with NATO's Partnership for Peace. So let's see. Russia, which continues to growl over NATO expansion in Eastern Europe, is also observing keenly any activity in the Indian Ocean. Already, NATO has encroached up to the Persian Gulf. In October 2007, NATO concluded its first ever naval exercise in the Indian Ocean, part of an American strategy to establish NATO's presence in this crucial region. Russia, Iran, and even China fear NATO's expanding alliance with Pakistan will give it a foothold in the region. All right, so there's some of the political background, some of the larger geopolitical background as to how Sri Lanka managed to write itself a blank check from the UN Human Rights Council. Let's see. Okay, Sri Lanka bars access to refugee camps. The Red Cross has been barred from visiting some of the camps in Sri Lanka to check on people held by the government since the country's military defeat of the Tamil Tiger rebels. The agency's president said May 27th in Geneva. We have access to some camps. We don't have access to others, said Jacob Kellenberger, the president of the International Committee of the Red Cross. The ICRC, which usually refrains from publicly criticizing governments and is mandated under the Geneva Conventions to aid victims of warfare. But the ICRC, like the UN and other aid agencies, complained that the Sri Lankan government denied it access to the war zone during the final weeks of the conflict. The other agencies also had access to the camps restricted since the war's end. Most of the displaced persons have been confined in Manic Farm, described by the UN as the world's largest displacement camp, holding 200,000 people in endless rows of white tents on a 570-hectare lot of former scrubland in the country's north. All right. Now, I believe there's just one more thing that I want to read about the situation in Sri Lanka. Here, this one from May 27th. Immediate aftermath of the victory over the Tamil Tigers. Sri Lanka accused of ethnic cleansing, quote-unquote, in Tamil areas. Aid officials, human rights workers, and community leaders in Sri Lanka say Tamils are being driven out of areas in the northeast of the country by killings and kidnappings carried out by pro-government militias. They charge the government to simultaneously encourage members of the Sinhalese majority in the south to relocate into the vacated villages. One foreign charity worker told Britain's Daily Telegraph the number of Tamils disappearing in and around Trincomalee, 50 miles south of the final conflict zone, has been increasing in the last 3 months. Some of the missing were found dead with signs of torture. Another anonymous aid worker said the killings were part of a strategy to drive out the Tamils. Quote, Eastern province is vulnerable. There's cleansing by the Sinhalese. There will be more problems with land grabbing. The demography changes and the Tamils, who are the majority, will soon become a minority, he said. He claimed many villagers had moved out after the army declared their land to be part of a, quote, high security zone, end quote, while Sinhalese had been given incentives to move in and provide support services to new military bases. Many Tamils sold their homes and land at below market prices after members of their families had been killed or had been disappeared, he added. One Western human rights worker said Tamils in and around Trincomalee were terrified because they believed the police were either complicit in or indifferent to the numbers disappearing or found dead. Quote, there's no investigation. It's a climate of terror and impunity, end quote, he said. A local campaigner for the families of the disappeared said the killings were speeding the flight of Tamils from the area. Quote, when there's a killing, other Tamils move out. Who goes to the Sinhalese police? You either live under the threat or you move out, he said. He said much of the ethnic cleansing was being done in the name of economic development, with Tamil villagers being moved out to make way for new roads, power plants, and irrigation schemes. Sinhalese workers are being drafted with incentives, including free land and housing. Quote, thousands of Sinhalese are coming in, getting government land and government assistance from the south. It's causing huge tensions, he said. He and others fear this model will now be applied to the island's north, where the final army onslaught to defeat the Tamil Tigers left 95% of the buildings demolished or heavily damaged. Since the victory earlier this month, President Mahinda Rajapaksa's government has been under pressure to, quote, win the peace, quote unquote, with generous development packages for Tamils in the north. Ministers have said they want to break the identification of the Tamils with the northern and eastern provinces. With the northern and eastern provinces and integrate them into the Sinhalese majority population throughout the country. In Colombo, the capital, billboard posters have contrasted the divided pre-victory Sri Lanka with the Tamil north and east shaded red and the united post-war island. Ministers have said billions of dollars will be needed to rebuild the area's roads, buildings, schools, hospitals, and water, electricity, communications infrastructure. Community leaders and Tamil politicians fear this will mean a further influx of Sinhalese. R. Sampanthan, the parliamentary leader of the Tamil National Alliance and an MP for Trincomalee, shared these fears. A new road is being built from Serubila, a Sinhalese village in Trincomalee district, to Polonnaruwa, a Tamil village, serving as an artery for new Sinhalese families in the northeast. It's ethnic cleansing, and we're concerned that this is what they will also do in the north, he said. So this is a pretty clear-cut analogy to what Israel is doing on the West Bank. I would hope that most listeners are astute enough to make that connection. There's been very, very little protest about this all over the world, and predictably the only protest that I've been aware of has come from the Tamil diaspora. When the offensive was going on last month, thousands of Tamil, ethnic Tamil Canadians in the Toronto area blockaded the highways there in protest of the military onslaught. So there was some, quite uncompromising protest. But again, it seems to have been confined to the Tamil diaspora. So, you know, I consider this to be a considerable betrayal of human solidarity. And, a couple of points I want to make. Hopefully I can wrap this up in 5 minutes, and then at 1 o'clock in the morning we can take listener phone calls on the question at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900 is, okay, for starters, the role of China and backing up Sri Lanka in the context of, you know, the new great game for Asia. Now, we can and we should oppose NATO's encroachment into Central Asia and the Indian Ocean. And at the same time, oppose, you know, some of the sleazy deals which this has prompted from the authorities in Beijing. So, you know, those of you out there who still think that, hopefully there's not many of you, hopefully you're just really aggressive callers to this radio station, but there really aren't too many of you who still think that, the whole great game showdown between China and Russia on one hand, although they've got their own rivalries, but China and Russia on one hand and the U.S. on the other has got anything to do with capitalism versus socialism. Hopefully, you know, you're disabused of this illusion by merely paying attention to, you know, what's going on. Never mind what's going on in China, which I, you know, argue is savage capitalism, but what's going on in terms of the regional alliances. Now, The Sinhalese dominated government in Sri Lanka and the Tamil Tigers both seem to be simple ethno-nationalists, so to speak, without much in the way of ideology. But the Tamil Tigers at least started out 25 years ago as anti-imperialist in their orientation. At that time, you know, Sri Lanka was more being backed by India and by the West. The Tamil Tigers sort of saw themselves as a kind of a left-wing national liberation movement. They increasingly over the years became, you know, kind of post-socialist and just emphasizing the ethnic aspect to their politics. The Sinhalese-dominated government of Sri Lanka is not even socialist in name or rhetoric. So, even more telling is the situation in Nepal, where, I mean, or now they seem to be working out some kind of a power-sharing agreement. But for the past several years before the peace deal was worked out, I believe it was last year, there was this really brutal counterinsurgency war going on against the Maoist guerrillas in Nepal and, you know, on the part of the reactionary monarchy. And which side was Beijing arming? The Maoist rebels? No. The reactionary monarchy that was fighting the Maoist rebels. Because the reactionary monarchy was being, on the outs with India. And, it played into the whole, you know, Sino-India rivalry. And, they sought to establish Nepal as a buffer state against perceived Western encroachment, and establish suzerainty in the old model of the imperial China. So once again, believe me, I am, just to make clear, I am not a fan of the Nepalese Maoists. I am not a fan of the Tamil Tigers, and I'm not a fan of Hamas. Okay, got nothing good to say about any of them. But the fact of the ostensible leadership does not in any way rule out the demand for basic human solidarity on the part of the Nepalese peasants, the Tamil minority, and the Palestinians, who are, under this brutal assault from, respectively, well, not in Nepal anymore, but up until about a year ago, the Nepalese state, the Sri Lankan state, and the Israeli state, right? Hopefully one does not have to elaborate on this. All right, now, speaking more to less about the geopolitical angle and more about the grassroots activist response has been. Well, it's dangerous to talk about this stuff because there is a tendency on the part of people who wish to apologize for war crimes to jump on the double standard. And to use the, well, what about argument? So, Israel does this all the time. You start talking about their criminal assault in Gaza, and Israel's apologists will immediately say, well, what about Darfur? Well, what about what Turkey is doing to the Kurds? Well, what about what Egypt is doing to the Nubians? What about what Algeria is doing to the Berbers? And, my response is, well, what about it? If that's wrong, then assuredly what you're doing in Gaza is also wrong, right? So frequently people who point out the double standards are making a very, very dangerous argument. And they're arguing that that one atrocity justifies another. For instance, if every atrocity which the Sudanese state commits against black Africans in Darfur, deposits some karmic funds into a cosmic bank account from which Israel is then entitled to make a withdrawal and commit equivalent atrocities against the Palestinians. You know, frequently that is the argument which is being subtly, of course not explicitly, but subtly and insidiously being made. And I'm sorry to say that a lot of, you know, callers to this radio show have also engaged in the same sort of logic. For instance, every time I've spoken about the situation faced by the Tibetans or the Uyghurs in China, invariably somebody calls in and says, well, what about the American Indians? What about the Native Americans? And my response to you is the same. What about them? Assuredly, if it is wrong to deny full sovereignty to the Native American nations, and for that matter to Puerto Rico and to the Native Hawaiians, then it's got to be just as wrong to deny it to the Tibetans and the Uyghurs, right? So my response to you is exactly the same. Well, what about it? I agree with you. Now, you know, that's a legitimate question. What about the Native Americans? That's a legitimate question to pose to the State Department. But I'm not the State Department. And I, you know, I've done lots of programming on this radio show about indigenous struggles in the Western Hemisphere, as everybody who listens or has been listening for the past several years is well aware. So, and I've done lots of writing on indigenous struggles throughout the Western Hemisphere, both here in the United States and in Latin America as a journalist and in Canada. So, you know, that's what about the Native Americans is a really good question to address to the State Department, but not to me. So I'd be interested in hearing what listeners have got to say about this. I only went on for 5 minutes more than I thought that I would. I'd like to hear from anybody who has some further insight as to why there has appropriately, emphasizing that word, appropriately, been global outrage over what Israel did in Gaza, and none, apart from a few press releases from human rights groups and a predictably outraged response from the Tamil diaspora, there has been none over what just befell the Tamils in northern Sri Lanka and continues. That's the first question. The second question is, you know, I'd love to hear from any Tamils who are listening out there who can give us an update. Or if there's any Sinhalese who are listening out there who think I've got it all wrong, I'd love to hear from you, too. Let's mix it up for the 20 minutes remaining to us at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down your radio. First thing, okay? Don't make me say it again, please. The first thing is turn down your radio. Be sitting near the radio so that as soon as you hear me say WBAI, you're on the air, you can immediately turn it off. Okay.
Okay, I did.
Good.
All right. First, I have to tell you that I enjoy your program. I mean, you make me think, which sometimes, actually, I don't always enjoy it. I don't always like to think, because sometimes it makes me reevaluate opinions that I've had.
That's my job. Thank you.
But in any case, on the Israeli thing, Israel in Gaza, the Palestinians have been lobbing bombs into Israel for a month now. What do you expect Israel to do?
All right, a couple of responses. The first thing I expect Israel to do is to abide by international law. Okay, that's the first thing I expect Israel to do. Waging, you know, this indiscriminate aerial assault on one of the most densely populated strips of land on the planet and wiping out people's homes, wiping out hospitals, and racking up a civilian casualty toll of 1,300 is illegal under the most basic precepts of international law. So that's the first thing I expect Israel to do. The second point to be made is that, as a matter of fact, there had been a ceasefire which was in place from June through, I believe it was early November, in which no missiles were fired. Very few missiles were fired, and those which were fired were not by Hamas, but from some renegade factions, and hardly took much of a toll, didn't really reach their targets. I think maybe one person was killed in that period. Israel broke the ceasefire with a commando raid in which they tried to take out one of these tunnels where Hamas was allegedly smuggling in terrorist materials or whatever, and they got into a firefight with some Hamas militants and left a few dead, and that's when Hamas said, okay, the ceasefire has been expired, it was a 6-month ceasefire, it's expired, and Israel is showing bad faith, so we're not renewing it. So it's really not as simplistic as all that, because first of all, even if you support that Israel, just playing devil's advocate here, even if you support that Israel was entitled to some kind of a military response, it assuredly was not what they, the draconian and clearly illegal overkill that they engaged in. And secondly, you know, it does appear that it was Israel which broke the ceasefire in the first place.
Well, wait a minute. You failed to mention that what the Palestinians were doing was also illegal.
How did I fail to mention that? What were they doing that was illegal?
They were lobbing bombs into Israel.
Okay,
from
all right,
Gaza.
Hang on a second. During the period of the ceasefire, listen, try to follow this. During the period of the ceasefire, which I believe was from June through November, there were very, very few missiles which fell in Israel. I think there were two or three in that period. Most of them missed their mark. I think one person was killed. And they were not fired by Hamas. They were fired by
fired by Palestinians.
No, they were fired by Islamic Resistance, whatever. They were fired by some unaccountable elements which were not under the command of Hamas.
I didn't say Hamas. I said Palestinians.
Right, but Israel's retaliation, you know, was done by the Israeli state. Okay, it was done by the people who were in power, the way Hamas is in power in Gaza. So you can't blame Hamas, which is what they did, for things which were done by unaccountable elements.
Then how would you recommend then that Israel respond to the bombs that were coming from Gaza?
I would recommend that Israel lift the siege of Gaza and withdraw from the West Bank and honor the internationally recognized borders of its own state, the Green Line. And thereby take the moral high ground, and the onus will be on the Palestinians to abide by the peace accords as well.
Which
Israel has not done that.
And the Palestinians have not done it either.
What do you mean the Palestinians have not done that? The Palestinians are not occupying Israel. Israel is occupying Palestine.
All right, I guess we're not going to agree on that then. Okay, but I enjoy your program, generally speaking.
I'm not going to agree. It's a matter of objective fact. There's nothing to disagree on.
That Israel has pulled out of Gaza.
Okay, Gaza is still under siege. Israel doesn't have any forces on the ground in Gaza, but Gaza is still under siege. Israel is still controlling its borders, controlling its coastline, keeping out humanitarian aid, etc. Okay, Gaza remains under siege.
Who's supplying food to Gaza right now?
Ostensibly the UN, but at Israeli behest. Israel controls the borders, and they just let in a trickle of aid. The UN has protested this time and time again, okay? Read up on it, okay? Thank you for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, turn down the radio and speak up.
Yes, okay, excellent show. And as it happens, I am just about totally agree with your analysis. So there are people who agree with you on most everything, at least a few. But your question was why all this outcry internationally about the situation in Gaza and not anything at all to speak of about the situation in Sri Lanka. And I don't have any further insight than you do, but I think it's absolutely sufficient that it's a matter of geopolitics and of the powers in the region supporting Sri Lanka.
Okay, now look, that explains what just happened at the UN Human Rights Council. But it doesn't explain the lack of outrage here on the streets of New York City. That isn't about geopolitics. That's about something else.
There's a betrayal of human solidarity.
Why do you think that is?
There's a deficiency in our analysis on the left.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think there is such intense passion about Palestine and zero about Sri Lanka?
Sri Lanka doesn't fit into anybody's analysis of, what it means to have struggle.
All right, I'm going to offer a couple of explanations myself before we move on to the next call. I'm going to offer just a couple of brief explanations before we move on to the next call and throw them out for the consideration of the remaining callers in the remaining 15 minutes. Okay, one, here's the best reason for the double standard, okay? The best reason for the double standard is that what Israel did in Gaza was being carried out with our tax dollars. That's a really good reason, as a matter of fact. We have a greater responsibility to protest Israel's aggression because it's being done with our tax dollars. And those of us, such as myself, with Jewish last names, have got yet another level of responsibility here because it's ostensibly being done in our name, in the interest of world Jewry, if you will. So those are two legitimate reasons why we have a greater responsibility to protest what Israel does as opposed to what Sri Lanka does. All right. I'm acknowledging there's some good reasons for the double standard. I don't think that completely lets us off the ticket, though, for in terms of our responsibilities of solidarity to the Tamils. The second reason I'm going to put forth is a little bit more complicated. The second reason is that Israel is strategic to global politics because of the proximity of the Middle East oil, and more significantly because there are all of these passions attached to it, and particularly to the city of Jerusalem by all three of the world's major monotheistic faiths, whereas of course this is not the case in Sri Lanka. That's the second reason. Somewhat legitimate, although not as legitimate as the first one. But now here's the thing, okay? The second reason kind of, it's got a fuzzy edge and it sort of merges in to a third reason, which I hope is the least significant of the three, which, I dare to say it is anti-Semitism or Jew hatred, if you will. And, there's a certain sector of, unfortunately, the left for whom, the question isn't really that they love the Palestinians so much as that it's an excuse to get out in the street and march against the Jews. And, I will note that not even the Tamils who have been protesting the aggression in Sri Lanka have engaged in these, promiscuous analogies between, the Sri Lankan state and Nazi Germany, the way so many people did during the Gaza aggression. And saw all these banners at the rallies, the Star of David equals the swastika. So, that just, unfortunately, that reality exists. I hope that it's the smallest of the three reasons which I've laid out. But unfortunately, it does. The fact that the Palestinians' oppressors happen to be Jews, I think, plays into the equation, unfortunately. All right, okay, now I've just ventured into more dangerous territory. So let's keep going with phone calls at 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air. No, you're not. WBAI, you're on the air. No, you're not. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Bill.
Hello. Turn down your radio, Monroe, if that's you.
It's down.
Okay, good.
I kind of agree mostly with what you've said. I heard WNYC talking about it and even BAI. They never got to one essential that I discovered in The Economist about the Tamils and Sri Lanka. That was that the Tamils originally, 26 years ago or so, tried to be integrated into the Sri Lankan society, but they were like the untouchables in India, who are now striving for a better place in society. Not to say that I shouldn't try to clean sewers if I could earn a living. You know what I mean?
Thank you, Monroe. That's a very astute. This is a very astute observation, and I appreciate that. I don't think that the situation of the Tamils was quite as extreme as that of the Dalits in India. Or so-called untouchables, but certainly they had been facing, you know, generations of institutionalized discrimination. People who take up arms in a national liberation struggle usually don't do so lightly. Usually there's damn good cause. Thank you, Monroe. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Yeah, I got a question. What's all this about human solidarity? It's the first time I've listened to the show, and I keep hearing you use this term. Humans have been butchering each other since we've had recorded history. That's what we do. We find it to our advantage. We take other groups of humans, and we start hacking them up for their land, for their property, or for kicks.
Okay,
you know?
All right, and you think that we should just stand by and allow this to happen?
Well, unfortunately, the world doesn't go on my preferences. This is simply a fact. You don't have to go any further than the first five chapters.
Okay, so that's merely a neutral fact. And when this sort of behavior emerges anywhere on the planet, we have no responsibilities of solidarity whatsoever.
Well, we don't have any responsibility to something that doesn't exist. I mean, this is just pure
I'm sorry. What doesn't exist? What doesn't exist?
Human solidarity. It doesn't exist.
What are you talking about? There were thousands of people in the streets when the Gaza aggression was going on. Of course it exists. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio.
Hello?
Turn down the radio.
Yes, sir?
Turn down the radio and speak up.
First-time caller?
Yes. Please speak up.
I couldn't agree with you any better than what you said about Israel is very aggressive against the Palestinians. And I wanted to agree with you with the second thing you said. It's all about politics. Why I said it's all about politics is the lobbyists, Israel lobby a lot of congressmen and senators in the United States government, and they turn a blind eye to what's happening to the Palestinians.
Do you have anything to say about Sri Lanka?
Well, I don't know much about Sri Lanka. I don't know much what's going on with Sri Lanka. But I've been following the Palestinian situation very closely.
Right. Well, there's a lot of people like you, particularly on the left in New York City, who have been following Palestine very, very closely and don't know much about Sri Lanka. The question I'm exploring tonight is, why is that?
Because the media doesn't show much about Sri Lanka like they do with the Palestinians and Israelis conflict.
That's certainly true, but it's sort of begging the question, because one could then ask, why is that?
Is Israel going to be punished for what they did to the Palestinian war crimes? I mean, there is more than several incidents that they used it, weapons that's not treaty to the Geneva Convention that they've been using, even in
Okay, probably there isn't going to be any justice, any significant justice for the Israelis who ordered these war
crimes.
Because
of the lobbyists
lobby
in Washington,
But I will note that the UN Human Rights Council has called for an independent investigation. Can I talk?
Yes, sir.
The UN Human Rights Council has called for an independent investigation of Israel's war crimes in Gaza. The UN Human Rights Council, in the case of Sri Lanka, adopted a resolution which was written by the Sri Lankan government, which calls, obviously, for no investigation and essentially amounts to a blank check for Sri Lanka's war crimes.
Do you think something is going to be done about the situation at Israel?
Every producer on WBAI, I shouldn't say every, but a lot of different producers on WBAI discuss this question. I'm trying to have a slightly different question tonight, a different discussion tonight. Why is there this double standard? Why does the world owe no solidarity to the Tamils?
It all boils down to the media.
I'm sorry?
It all boils down to the media. That's what the media shows on TV.
Why do you keep on expressing all this outrage about Palestine, and every time I try to bring up the Tamils, you just change the subject back to the Palestinians?
Because it's not interesting to a lot of people. The people is only interested in what's happening in Gaza and Israelis.
Right, so why is that?
Because of the media. The media controls what people's minds think.
Right. So I suggested maybe you try to check out what's been happening in Sri Lanka. You'll probably find
it. I appreciate it, and I enjoy your program, sir.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your program, and I hope you keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, sir. Stay tuned.
Good night.
Stay tuned. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio, please. Turn down the radio. Don't waste our time.
Turn down
the radio, please. Turn down. No, I don't want to listen to myself whine.
Hello?
You're on the air. Please turn down the radio.
Okay, sorry about that.
Thank you, thank you.
To answer your question, I think you kind of answered it already, of why they cover the Palestinian situation over Sri Lanka. It's, I mean, there are people in the media that hate the Jews.
I think that's one.
I mean, I think that's one half of it.
I'm not even sure it's a half. You know, I mean, I gave three reasons, so maybe it's a third. I would like to think that it's significantly less than a third.
But I think it has. I mean, that's one agenda, and I think the other agenda, just to make it look like the whole Middle East is a huge problem, and the U.S. needs to step in.
Well, the Middle East is a huge problem.
Yeah, well, it is,
yeah.
Of course. And then there's just natural hatred for people, like with people with just Jewish last names. You know, I grew up in a household of, you know, half Jews, half Spanish, and I've seen it, you know, just the hatred with the, just by the last names, you know. And we're not Hasidic Jews, but, you know, just last names that sound Jewish, and it's just natural hatred for us, for whatever reason. And I think that's part of it. I think that has a large part to do with it.
Well, I'm glad I'm not alone in my paranoia. You know, it's very controversial to talk about this because, I mean...
Oh, it is.
I mean, you even bring up the question of anti-Semitism in this context, and you are immediately perceived as apologizing for Israel's aggression.
I think what Israel's doing is terrible.
Yes.
What they're doing is terrible.
And Israel, what complicates it is that, of course, Israeli propaganda is constantly, you know, hiding behind the, you know, the specter of anti-Semitism.
Right.
And trying to portray any criticism as anti-Semitism. Well, the fact that Israel is engaging in this kind of really despicable propaganda doesn't mean that anti-Semitism doesn't exist.
That's right. It does exist. Right. You know, you, I mean, I'm sure you've been through it, you know, with your last name.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right,
I'm mixed too, by the way, so I get it from both sides.
There you go.
I'm not Jewish enough for the Jews.
There you go.
Thanks for your call.
All right. You got it.
All right. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio, please. Turn down the radio, please.
I got it down.
Okay. You're on the air.
Yes, Bill.
You don't have the radio down.
Okay, I got it. I got it, Bill. I just want to say I agree with everything you're saying, absolutely. But I'd like to make one point with regard to your main question, which is why is so much attention directed at what's going on in Israel-Palestine and such little attention given to those other major issues where there's also some form of genocide and state-sponsored killings.
Please do.
And I believe one important factor here is the fact that the Israeli-Palestine situation has been going on for something like, 60-something years now since the founding of the State of Israel.
So has the Tamil Sinhalese situation been going on since Sri Lanka's independence and even before.
But I don't think that the Sri Lankan thing really came into the public's view until recently.
It still is not in the public view. That's my whole point.
Well, it has been. It has been more or less in the news of late.
Yeah, more or less. Exactly. Were there any protests in the streets of New York about it? Not that I was aware of. And if there were any, I'll bet you dollars to donuts that they were 100% Tamil. Thanks for your call. I'm going to see if I can squeeze in one or two more in the few minutes remaining to us.
Okay, go.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, Bill, you cut me off so fast.
Oh, Monroe, I gave you a minute to speak. You made a good point, and I appreciate it. WBAI, you're on the air. No, you're not. WBAI, you're on the air. Please turn down the radio.
Got you.
Yeah.
I just had one point to make. You had a beef with the comparison of the Jewish state with the Nazism.
Yes.
I can see your beef, but I can see some of the tactics that are used by the Israeli state to marginalize and make ghettos out of the Palestinian neighborhoods. They force them. They take their homes away without any due cause. So in that regard, they can be seen as early stages of Nazis, like in the early 30s. No one's saying they have gas chambers or anything like that, which is, I think, what maybe you might think when they refer to it as Nazis.
Right, well, look, I just said that it was a promiscuous analogy. I didn't say that there wasn't certain similarities which can be drawn. Of course there are certain similarities which can be drawn.
Yeah, that was, you know...
And I'm just noting once again the double standard that even the Tamils aren't accusing the Sri Lankan state of being, you know, a Nazi state. And Sri Lanka's crimes have been pretty much equivalent to Israel's.
I'm like most of your listeners or most of the general public, I'm not as familiar.
Yeah.
That's probably, you know, for some of the reasons that you stated earlier, which I do probably agree with. I got to learn more about it. I wish you would... I tuned in kind of late, so you probably set it up.
You can listen on the web. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call.
Thank you
very, very much for your call. WBAI, you're on the air. Please speak up.
Hello?
Hi. We just have a minute left. Please speak up.
Okay. I just want to bring up that I think the reason it's brought up, the Palestinian conflict may be brought up more, is because there's the religious aspect.
Yes.
You know, there's a Christian, a Christian...
Right, the whole Christian-Muslim angle obviously a Buddhist-Hindu angle is not going to arouse the same kind of passions here in New York City. Yes.
And also there's a much larger Jewish contingency here.
As noted.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, we do have to be off the air. Should I try to squeeze in one more call? Just 20 seconds. Go. 20 seconds. Go. 10 seconds.
Hello?
Yeah, 5 seconds. Go.
Okay.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.